Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
The only safe choice is having a skill set that you can offer to the broader market.
Today, I'm bringing you a conversation with Daria Rudnick. She will explore what it really takes to build something that lasts, whether that's a team, a business, or a career on your own terms. Daria brings a rare perspective, someone who has operated at the highest levels of corporate leadership and chosen to walk away from it, not once, but several times, in pursuit of something more meaningful. What she's discovered along the way about freedom, structure, and the hidden architecture of high-performing teams might just reframe how you think about the work you're building. She'll challenge the idea that a steady paycheck is ever truly safe and make the case that the only real security is a skill set the market values. She'll also walk through the five elements that separate teams that thrive from those that quietly fall apart. And if you've ever wondered whether it's possible to build the kind of collaborative, purposeful culture outside of a corporate structure, this conversation is your answer. Stay with us. Now let's welcome Daria Rudnick. Daria is a team architect and executive leadership coach and the author of Clicking, a Practical Framework for Building High-Performing Teams That Don't Depend on the Leader to Function. A former chief people officer and ex-Deloitte professional with 15 years of international experience in tech and telecom, she has helped leaders across six continents navigate financial crises, wars, and COVID-19. Today, she works with executives and HR leaders who are building teams that can perform and hold together in an AI-driven world. Daria, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me, Dave.
A pleasure to have you on. So you went from being a chief people officer to an independent coach and consultant. Let's start by talking a little bit about what's behind that and a little bit about your career journey.
Well, I was very lucky at the beginning of my career. I studied my career in Deloitte, which was a great experience. And then I was moving up the career ladder pretty fast, becoming a chief people officer, like VP of organization development, and then chief people officer at a telecom company by the age of 35, something like that. But at some point I always had this feeling, okay, I want to try it on my own. I want to try my own thing. My first experience in that was when I was on a maternity leave and I launched my first startup, which was an educational startup helping parents teach their young kids English online. But then again, I came back to corporate, worked there for some years. It's very hard to quit, to be honest. I mean, when you have a regular paycheck and when someone calls you and say, hey, we want you on board and here is the money we're going to offer you. And it's like, it's definitely more that like I was earning at the beginning of my independent career. So I got back to the office again, worked as a chief people officer for some tech companies, but then eventually I quit my corporate career and focused on what I love doing best and what I can do best, which is helping leaders build strong teams.
Yeah, a steady paycheck and all the perks that come with being corporate, particularly when they keep telling you they want you, it's very enticing. It's really hard to say no.
It is.
Yeah. So what is it about entrepreneurship that kept pulling at you?
I think for me, the most important thing is freedom to make my own choices and to do what I think is right. Like being responsible for my own career. And by independent, I mean that like I get what I earn, what I do. And I know that if I push forward, I'll get more. While in corporate, there's so many dependencies, I would say politics, it's not always a negative thing. It's the how power is distributed within an organization and understanding and playing those strings. It's a separate skill, which is interesting at some point. but it's not something that I want to do all my life.
Yeah. No, you're 100% correct. And more astute than many people, realizing that there are a lot of things that go on in the corporate structure that are, A, besides the fact that they're beyond our control. Yes, it's a lot of politics and things that have nothing to do with us, but can have a huge impact on our career and our compensation.
Yeah.
So when you do your own thing, you actually have the ultimate control. You can decide what your politics are going to be. You can decide how you want to play things. And yes, the reward is whatever you earn.
And some people say like having been in the corporate world, it's kind of a safe, like having a job is safe choice. And I think now we see that it's not a safe choice at all, because one moment you have a job, the other moment you just don't, with all the layoffs happening everywhere. It's not a safe choice anymore. And the only safe choice is having a skill set that you can offer to the broader market.
Yeah, exactly. And honestly, I don't think it's ever been safe. There have always been layoffs, and you don't necessarily get any kind of warning that there's going to be a layoff. And it may have absolutely nothing to do with your own ability and skill set and the value you've been providing. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what happens during that transition and afterwards, particularly when it comes to the built-in structure that is designed to make the outcomes in a corporate structure as effective as possible, right? So you have the role that you're responsible for, and then there's all these things that you aren't responsible for. Usually they try to align it so that what you're really good at is what you focus on. It's things you're not good at, somebody else will do. And then there's the, what I like to call kind of the informal part of the structure that helps decision-making go well, right? So, you know, if you think back to the times when everybody worked in person, there were a lot of opportunities to run things by other people informally. In today's world, where people, there's a lot of hybrid work and remote work, these casual interactions might not happen quite the same way or as frequently, but they do still happen. And right, you have an opportunity to interact with other people when you're making a decision to make sure that you're making as effective a decision as possible. I wonder what you experienced when you went out on your own and how you dealt with that.
Well, the one thing that I missed and probably still miss is being like working with the real team, like the big team. I do have a small team now. It's not just me, but it's very small. And in the corporate, you have many people to talk to. Like you can learn from so many people. But what I've learned through those years is that, I mean, there's so many great people out there. All you need to do is just say, hey, let's talk and let's have a conversation and let's share some ideas. And that's how actually you can do the same thing, but with people who are not just in your corporate environment, in your company, but with anyone, basically, anyone you feel is worth talking to. There was a LinkedIn where there's so many people sharing their knowledge, sharing their ideas, just so many podcasts, people share their knowledge and ideas, just reaching out to those people and saying, hey, well, I love what you're talking about. Let's talk, let's think, let's support each other, let's help each other out. So it is still possible.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the teams and how teams function, since this, you've written a book about this, this is your area of expertise. What would you suggest people, particularly those who have gone independent, think about when it comes to teams?
What I'm noticing is people who go independent are those people who are capable of doing things and execution. Because otherwise, it's hard to do things if you're not executing. But the backside of it is people who are very well at execution, they kind of tend to execute it all by themselves. And I mean, I did that. Same thing. I mean, I did all by myself until eventually I understand, okay, I'm doing things that I'm not good at. I'm doing things that I can definitely delegate to someone else. You might not have a huge team at the beginning, but finding the way to delegate. And not, and it's not just about, here is some things I want you to do them, but kind of explaining what is that you're trying to achieve together so that the person that's, even like you have a virtual assistant or a freelancer supporting you in something, they need to understand the bigger picture as well so that they can better support you in what you do. And that's important both for corporate teams, startup teams, like for small business owners, having a shared understanding of what is it you're trying to achieve together, that will help them help you.
Right. And I presume that this shared understanding is something that you focus on in your work with corporate clients, as well as people who are working with small teams the way you do in your business.
That's the first step. Yes. Like strong teams, strong. I mean, even for individuals, like understanding why am I doing this and what's the biggest purpose is always the first step.
Right. And then once you have created this shared understanding, what are some of the other factors that are really critical?
Well, the other thing is like absolutely critical. I'm not too good at that. I'm still developing because I'm not a very structured person. But this, like having someone to work with, having my team, is actually prompting me to be more clear about my work processes. It's not just, oh, I want to do this and now I want to do that and I want to try to accomplish this and I want to write this article and publish a newsletter or something like that. I'm creating a work process. How do I run my like outreach? What's my social media strategies? Like all of those things that help the tasks flow easily. I don't have to tell those people what they need to be doing because there is a process. And it also is shareable. Like if someone is going, like if I change their assistant, someone decides to move to some other task, it's easy to transfer those knowledge and work process to some other person. And it really is like very clear to me, is it working? Is it not working? I can manage the results. So creating those well-designed processes is super critical. And especially with AI, again, if you work with AI and if you want to automate things, understanding the process is step number one.
Yeah. You know, Daria, you've actually hit on something that that I noticed a long time ago in my business when I was thinking about starting to generate content. And the first thing I did before producing anything was to hire, I hired a college student to help. But the fact that I had hired somebody to help with the process meant I had to give them work. And as a result, we actually had a content calendar from the very first blog post. And that had kind of led into consistent release of episodes on this podcast. So we've released episodes every week since we started in 2014. But again, it all goes back to having a team. And it was a very tiny team, but just having one other person to delegate work to made all the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what are some of the other components that are important to making teams function well?
For bigger corporate teams, there are five things that I write in my book, Clicking, which start with a clear purpose. The second one is linking connections, how people are connected to each other, how well they understand each other, what are the communication processes. And like you mentioned, remote teams, like we don't have those interactions between, I don't know, meetings. So intentionally building those connections, intentionally like creating those interactions, small social conversations, not about work, but about like a person on the other side of the screen is very important. The third one is what we mentioned, the integrated work, how we structure the work, what are the processes, what are the roles, who's responsible for what, how we communicate, email, Slack, what works for us and for our team. The third one is collaborative decisions. Who is making what decisions? Like if I have an assistant and it's my smaller team, like some decisions I want them to run by me, but something I can say, okay, you decide, like you know how to do that. You've been doing that for quite a while. It's your decision. And something we'll just get together and discuss. Okay, what is that we together think is worth doing? So it's either decisions that stay with the leader, decisions go to individual contributors, or decisions that you need to discuss together as a team. And finally, how you learn and grow together. Because like what needs to change? What's not working anymore? Or what if business goals change, if new tools are in place, if something emerges, how do you learn and grow together? So those five elements that I describe in my book, clicking, that I implemented them. I use them in my work as a chief people officer. I use them with my clients. With smaller team, I mean, they're not that prominent, but still the elements of that always present in our interaction and our work together.
Yeah, I mean, those are very critical elements. And as you were describing them, I'm thinking about teams that I've been involved in, which ones have worked well and which ones haven't worked well. The ones that haven't worked so well are usually missing some of these components. Daria, could we talk a little bit about plateaus and complexity? Where have you experienced plateaus in your work or in your career, and how have you dealt with those plateaus?
I mean, to be honest, I don't like the plateaus I usually experience as downfall. So it's going to feel I'm falling down. There's no such thing as being on the same spot. It's either you go up, I mean, for me personally, either go up or down. It's very hard to feel like you're going down, or at least like you're trying to get up and move up again, but something is not working. I've had that multiple times in my career. I've had that multiple times in my business. And the only thing that I think you can do about it is, again, take a step back and think, okay, what am I doing now? What's working? What's not working? What do you want to try doing next? And like this focus on the future, what can I do next is what helps me move forward. I read somewhere that like entrepreneurs need to be very optimistic, because otherwise you'll just will not make it when there is another fail and there was another client who is falling off, or there was something in your approach that doesn't work, or the product that's not working. There's a lot of sort of failures per se, but they're not always failures. Sometimes they experience as failures. Sometimes they experience as learning opportunities. But again, the most important thing is just take a step back, take a deep breath. Okay, what can I do next? And keep going.
Yeah, no, you definitely need to be optimistic. One of the things that I often say is, as an employee, if you're wrong more than 10% of the time, you're probably going to hear about it. And as an entrepreneur, if you're right more than 10% of the time, you're probably doing really well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And like you the thing you mentioned, when you are an employee, it's so hard to make mistakes because everyone is watching. I mean, it feels like everyone is watching you. And no matter what people say, we're tolerant to mistakes. I mean, people notice mistakes and they see mistakes as failures. And that's...
And they dwell on them.
Yeah. And it's very rare to be like, to have this freedom to make mistakes, which is an incredible opportunity of working on your own. Like, failing so many times. it's such a valuable, not always pleasant, but such a valuable experience.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of perseverance to try to figure out what is actually going to work. And I think about Thomas Edison creating supposedly 10,000 light bulbs that didn't work before there was one that came to market, right? That takes a lot of perseverance. And, you know, along with this, with the need for optimism and perseverance, getting support from other people, right, when you're going through this trial and error process can be really important. So I wondered if you could share a little bit about what your experience has been getting support from peers.
Well, that's, again, like I mentioned, like not having a team is something that I miss from the corporate world, but building my own support network, a network of peers, mentors, clients. Because again, like when I work with clients, they learn something from me and I learn so much from them. And when I meet peers, whether it's a conference or LinkedIn or some other like places, we can share ideas, we can support each other, we can collaborate on some projects. And it's always looking for people out there, someone who you want to connect and something you want to do with them, and be proactive, because not always people are ready to like reach out to you with some opportunities. But I mean, almost everyone I reached out to, they were happy to collaborate. People like to network. People like to collaborate, especially when they don't need to make this effort to make this first step.
Yes, yes. Are there intentional teams or communities that you are part of or have been part of that have been helpful to you in providing that kind of support?
Well, I am a part of like several communities, but I'm like, to be honest, I'm relying on my own like network and picking up people from different places and different communities to talk about different topics. That works best for me, but being within a community is also very helpful. I like when there is this shared connection where people support each other or create something together. So yeah, I'm part of a few communities, but I'm also building my own. Not a community, but my own network.
Right, right. And are there characteristics of these teams, communities, networks for support? Are there characteristics that you find work really well?
Well, the ones that I really like, well, first of all, is positive intentions. Like people really positive there. They're not trying to get something from you. There is a lot of give and like less take and more give. When there is a lot of human-to-human connection, like it could be like meetups, events, in any other form. But when people not just like talk online, but they also meet online or offline, I think it's very important. And co-creation, like doing something together, meeting for, discovering how AI works in learning, or like having a mentorship program, or like anything that when people co-create and build something together.
Yeah, I like that, actually, that aspect of co-creation. I find that's, even when it's not intentionally part of the community structure, it's something that often will evolve, and it really takes the relationship to a whole different level.
It's a sign of a good community when people really want to collaborate and co-create something.
Yeah, absolutely. Daria, before we close out, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you want to mention?
Well, I want to mention that like being an entrepreneur and doing my own business is fun. I know some people thinking of it. And I know in these times, a lot of senior people, executives also thinking, okay, I'm looking for more meaning. But taking this step is hard. And I mean, you don't need to do it like now. But what is very critical, but it's very important, is to build this like parallel careers. Have your own corporate job, but start thinking of what else is there that you can try and do, whether it's a hobby or business or something that can eventually help you build your own practice or develop your own skill so that you're not relying on corporate alone.
Love that. Thank you so much. Daria, if someone wants to go deeper with anything we've discussed today, get a copy of your book or any of the resources you have, get in touch with you, where's the best place to go?
Well, I'm very open to connections on LinkedIn. Reach out to me, send me a message. Let's keep this conversation going. And obviously, you can find me on my website, dariarudnik.com, where you can find all the information about my book and lots of downloadable resources for building a strong team.
Thank you. Daria, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau.
Thanks for having me, David.
Share a few snippets about yourself and your thoughts. My guest today has been team architect and executive leadership coach, Daria Rudnik. Thank you, Daria, for joining us.
Thank you.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.